First Baptist Church of Redmond, July 16, 2017. Guest speaker, Dr. Tom Hoyle. The Lord's Mysterious Ways with the USA.
For those I haven't met during Sunday school, again, my name is Tom Hoyle with Bible and Science Ministries, and since 1985, our full-time ministry has dealt with the wonderful accuracy of God's Word, especially in terms of history and archaeology and science. During the week, we speak in public schools, Christian schools, homeschool groups, Awanas, youth friendlies, and that kind of thing. And of course, on Sundays, we get to be in God's houses like yours, and we can't thank you enough for your interest and friendship and support. However, since 1982, I've served in the Air Force Reserve, and during that time, I began sharing programs about America's spiritual heritage. We put together 9 different programs for military audiences, and 9 years ago, I became convicted that maybe we should share them with civilians. And we've been very pleased at the wonderful response that you have given to us in the past. Today, we're very pleased to share with you a brand new program, as you know, God's Mysterious Ways with the USA. Now, folks, I'll be the first one to tell you. You already know this. America's got serious problems, right? Not just economic and political, but moral and spiritual. But when you look at American history, it becomes extremely obvious that God is responsible for the founding of this country. God, in spite of all of America's sins and shortcomings, has been using this country, right? And God is not quite done with this country yet. So if you will, let's look at some examples of God interceding throughout American history. For the sake of time, we did delete 3 of the examples. We'll share 5 of them with you here today that we hope will be an inspiration to you. Having said all that, we better go ahead and get started while we still have our computer image there, okay? Anyway, the Bible tells us, "For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways." People say this is where we get the famous expression, "The Lord works in mysterious ways." And let's look at how the Lord has worked in American history. Times when Americans prayed, God decided the prayers were just, and he decided to answer those prayers, starting with God's mysterious ways with the USA toward the Pilgrims. As you probably know, the story of the Pilgrims, this group of Puritan separatists from England, is the most famous example of God's providence in American history. Most of you know the story, so we're just going to hit some highlights, okay? As you might recall from a couple years ago, the fact is the Pilgrims were actually going to settle in West Africa. As a result of God intervening in Jamestown with Captain John Smith, and most of all with Pocahontas, who later on made a big splash when she went to London, England, the Pilgrims changed their minds, which changed all of history, didn't it? They decided to go to North America instead. As you might recall, that voyage across the Atlantic was really rugged for the Pilgrims. However, Governor Bradford of the Pilgrims, he said, "What could now sustain us but the Spirit of God and His grace?" For the sake of time, we're just going to mention the fact, as you probably already know, God was very active during the voyage of the Pilgrims to see to it they got to North America. I don't sell the book. I highly recommend it. It's a brand new book by Michael Medved. He has an entire section dealing with God's providence regarding the Pilgrims. He says, "Cold, hungry, and desperate, deposited by winds, waves, and errant navigation some 250 miles from their original destination, they concluded that a higher power had brought them to precisely the right place." As you might recall, the first winter of the Pilgrims was really, really rugged, wasn't it? But Governor Bradford, he reports, "These hardships did not dismay the Pilgrims, but they rested on His providence and knew in whom they had believed." For one thing, as you will recall, God intervened by sending to the Pilgrims an English-speaking Christian Native American named Squanto, who helped the Pilgrims through that next year, and they had a wonderful Thanksgiving as a result, didn't they? Bradford said Squanto was a special instrument sent of God for the Pilgrims' good beyond their expectations. And folks, it's hard to exaggerate how important the Pilgrims have been to American history. Without the Pilgrims, no Mayflower Compact, which was the forerunner of the U.S. Constitution. Without the Pilgrims, New England would be completely different today. Without the pilgrims, hey, no Thanksgiving. And most of all, without the pilgrims, no popcorn. If you go to Washington, D.C., you'll find the pilgrims honored almost everywhere. They're even on the back of the American $10,000 bill. Check it out the next time you get your change. If you ever do go to Plymouth, folks, after you've seen the Mayflower too, please keep in mind what Bradford said. For them, a place did God provide, and in the wilderness did them guide to the American shore, which made way for many more. And if you go to Plymouth, be sure and visit Plymouth Plantation, which brings us to an interesting point of trivia. What colors did the pilgrims wear, everybody? I'll bet our biologist knows, don't you, ma'am? Absolutely. Folks, unfortunately, I think in an attempt to make the pilgrims out to be a bunch of monochromatic fuddy-duddies, since the 1950s, they've had the pilgrims in black and white. If you go to Plymouth, go to Plymouth Plantation. And my research was confirmed. The actors and actresses in Plymouth Plantation are downright psychedelic. The most common colors of Plymouth pilgrims wore were scarlet and chartreuse. I went to one actress and I said, "Ma'am, I thought you folks all wore black and white." She was staying in character and she said, "Oh, no, sir. Only the clergy, like your pastor, and the magistrate may wear black and white." White, I'll get that straight. "Everybody else, we wear the colors of the Creator's flowers." Aren't you glad you came to church to learn that? And folks, if you go to Plymouth, be sure and visit the Forefathers Monument. This is the tallest stone monument in America, and virtually nobody has ever even heard of it. This is a monument to the faith of our founding fathers. And of course, it's featured in the famous film Monumental with Kirk Cameron. But for the sake of time, we have to keep moving to the Lord's mysterious ways with the USA during the Revolution. In times past, we've talked about God's marvelous intervention regarding the Battle of Brooklyn. Just last month, I was in Brooklyn, New York, and I retraced the battlefield. It was a remarkable experience. We've also talked about the almost funny Triple River crossing that frustrated the British greatly. Now, the 10-day campaign. No doubt you recall the remarkable account of Washington's crossing of the Delaware River. Against all odds, they were successful with that. And again, against all odds, they were very successful in the pivotal Battle of Trenton, which followed. Representing the other side, Winston Churchill, he stated, "The effect of this stroke, the Trenton attack, was out of all proportion of its military significance. It was the most critical moment in the war." But Henry Knox, Washington's artillery commander, he put credit where credit was due. He said, "Providence seems to have smiled upon every part of this enterprise." And even secular historians are observing the same thing. D.H. Fisher was one of my favorite Revolutionary War historians. He's a secular person, but he admitted, "The Americans deeply believe that the Battle of Trenton was a sign of God's redeeming providence and proof that the Continental Army was his instrument. This idea of God's all-powerful providence gave them a divine purpose." Following the First Battle of Trenton was the Second Battle of Trenton and the Battle of Princeton. This concludes what's known as the 10-day campaign. The world's greatest military historian at that time was Frederick the Great of Prussia, and he stated, "This campaign was the most brilliant in the world's history." But Yale President Ezra Stiles, he stated, "Who but a Washington, inspired by heaven, could have conceived the surprise moves upon the enemy? The United States are under peculiar obligations to become a holy people unto the Lord our God." Washington agreed. He stated, "Providence has heretofore saved us in a remarkable manner, and upon this we must principally rely." Secular historian William Forchten, he admitted, "This was a campaign involving a series of events that led Washington and others to conclude that the outcome was a miracle indicating divine providence was on their side." You might recall from previous programs, we've talked about how George Washington was in 30 different battles. No matter how hard he tried, he could not even get a scratch right in the middle of combat. 8 of those battles in particular, folks, were extremely dangerous for Washington, historians admit. They don't know how he survived any of those battles, especially all 8 of them. And 2 of those 8 would be the battles of Trenton and Princeton. I'm reminded of the verse, "With us is the Lord our God to help us and to fight our battles." There's a lot more about this in God in the Trenches. I highly recommend. Of course, there are other fine books, even secular books, now admitting God apparently was behind, folks, the Americans in the Revolutionary War. Now, for the sake of time, we better skip pirates and the cholera epidemic and move on to the national strife. Many of us, including myself, have thought that the Battle of Gettysburg was the most significant battle in the American Civil War. The experts, though, disagree. They would say the Battle of Antietam, America's deadliest day. This famous historian stated, "Antietam was the battle that changed the course of the Civil War." Or another one, he says, "There is not another battle in a Civil War that has greater consequence than Antietam." Well, the fact is, the North had to win the Battle of Antietam at all costs for 3 desperate reasons. Number 1, the North was extremely depressed about the Civil War. The North had not won a single major battle since the very beginning. And many Northerners wanted to end the war and allow the Union to be divided, which of course would change history. On top of that, Britain and France were about to take the side of the South, and that would guarantee a victory for the South. And then 3rd, Lincoln wanted to emancipate the slaves, but he had no credibility for doing that if we couldn't win one single battle in the Civil War. Well, folks, Lincoln became almost as much a prayer warrior as George Washington. Indeed, Lincoln said one time, "I have been driven many times upon my knees by the overwhelming conviction that I had nowhere else to go." Well, folks, it appears that a lot of people were praying, especially Lincoln, and God was listening. That brings us to Special Order 191 of Robert E. Lee, as you might know, the commander of the Southern armies. Robert E. Lee issued this order, which is a battle plan for the upcoming attack in Maryland at Antietam. These orders indicated what he wanted his 4 generals to do, what he wanted them, where he wanted them to do it, and when. Terribly important, this battle plan. And then something, folks, happened that's never happened before or since in American history. These absolutely essential orders, a copy of them with 3 cigars, were lost in a field outside Frederick, Maryland. And then something very, very bizarre happened. Nobody knows why, but an American private from the North several days later was in the area just walking across this field for no good reason. He found the orders. This private, he changed world history without knowing it. Private Barton W. Mitchell. He saw to it that General McClellan of the North got those orders. The trouble is, McClellan, he thought they were forgeries. And then, believe it or not, folks, McClellan's chief of staff, General Pittman, knew the Confederate general who copied the orders for Lee. He knew the man, knew his handwriting. He told McClellan, "Sir, these are legitimate orders. I recognize the man's handwriting." What are the odds of this, folks? To make a long story short, for the first time in his career, McClellan actually got a little bit aggressive, and he attacked. This historian stated, "Never has an American military commander been the recipient of such great intelligence." Another famous historian, Bruce Catton, "The Union General McClellan was the beneficiary of the greatest security leak in American military history and changed the course of history." Another one says, "Had those cigars and that order not been lost, the world would be a different place today." Now, you might be wondering, how is it I think that this might have been a miracle of God? God's providence, his intervention. Well, this historian admitted, a secular man, The finding in this lost order was an event so unlikely and so charged with ironies that it's become historical legend. It was a catastrophic piece of bad luck for General Lee. Another historian, fortune blessed General McClellan beyond all logical workings of the laws of probability. It seems unlikely that there will ever be a satisfactory solution to the mystery of how Order 191 was lost. Or I love this one from another famous historian, James McPherson. This was something spooky, a one in a million chance, and there's no way to know how it fell out that it happened. Or, as we wrap this up, Colonel Taylor was Lee's personal aide, a staff officer. He stated, "It looks as if the good Lord ordained that we should not succeed. The loss of this battle order turned the event of the war." As for Lincoln, he commented, "Antietam offered an indication of divine will. God has decided this." The narrator of the History Channel's program on Antietam said, "In the aftermath of Antietam, America was reborn. Truly, we're reminded of, with God, all things are possible." And again, there's a lot more about that in the book by Spivey, as well as some other good volumes, both secular and Christian. But moving on, again, for the sake of time, we now turn to the Lord's mysterious ways with the USA for Courage and Mercy. The story of Hacksaw Ridge is the story of a World War II American combat medic, Desmond Doss. Unfortunately, of course, it is a Hollywood movie. Based upon my research, reading all the books about Doss, website articles, magazine articles, etc., etc., they got the names right. folks, the fact is they grossly over-exaggerated the Army Brass's persecution of Private Doss, and they understated the wonderful impact of his young wife, Dorothy. Dorothy, by the way, as depicted in the film, did give him a Bible, which has a story all by itself. Doss became famous for reading that Bible all the time. He also became famous for praying all the time. But then what got everybody's attention, he became famous for not being able to get killed. His courage was extraordinary. He saved dozens of American soldiers in spite of great risk to his life. In the Pacific Theater of Operation during World War II, and they don't mention this in the movie either, Doss was already a legend in the 77th Infantry Division of the U.S. Army. All the 16,000 men had heard of Desmond Doss, the medic. He was cited for his valor during the Battle of Guam and Leyte, but nobody was prepared for the horrors of Okinawa. It was called Hacksaw Ridge. That was the nickname of this huge cliff that the Americans had to climb in order to get anywhere. Make a long, long, long story short, Doss's company led a new attack. They were virtually wiped out. The order was given to retreat. Doss could not bear the thought of leaving over 100 wounded Americans to die. Doss stayed behind all by himself. Unarmed, alone, behind enemy lines, under almost constant enemy fire, Desmond Doss prayed and then desperately started looking for wounded Americans. He found one, patched him up, brought him to the edge of Hacksaw Ridge. He manhandled this wounded man using a long rope 60 feet down to a ledge, six stories, where the man could be recovered. Then he got his breath back. During the next 12 hours, he stayed up there, and each time he saved a man, he said, "Please, Lord, help me get one more." After a 12-hour period, once again unarmed, alone, under almost constant enemy fire, Desmond Doss saved 97 Americans. And he was only getting started. The actor who plays Desmond Doss is the guy who's done the last two Spider-Man movies. When he saw the script for Hacksaw Ridge, he begged the casting director to give him a chance to play the part of a real superhero. If you're ever in San Antonio, Texas, after you've seen the Alamo, folks, my recommendation, the U.S. Army's medical History Museum. It is amazing. They have a monument to the 6 medics of World War II who were decorated with the Medal of Honor. Desmond Doss is at the top of the list. By the way, on a humorous note, folks, I don't know how on earth this happened, Pastor, but the abbreviation for a private first class is PFC. Somehow, somebody managed to misspell PFC. You can tell this is a government operation. Inside, folks, you'll see an exhibit with the citation for Desmond Doss's Medal of Honor. Now, I have read many, many, many citations for medals. I have written many of them myself in my duties in the Air Force Reserve for 35 years. I have never seen such an amazing citation in my life. And by the way, folks, the citation only credits Doss for saving one by one 75 Americans. Why is that? The Army said he saved 100 Americans. Doss said he only saved 50. The Army was rather exasperated, and they finally decided to split the difference. So they gave him credit for 75. Here's the real Desmond Doss with his faithful wife, Dottie. He was decorated with the Medal of Honor by Harry Truman himself, and of course, that was only one of his various decorations that he received. I'm reminded of the verse, "He shall call upon me, and I will answer him. I will be with him in trouble. I will deliver him and honor him." However, last but not least, before we go and have lunch, one more example, folks, the Lord's mysterious ways with the USA. Many of us remember when Neil Armstrong first walked on the moon, and that was a very exciting time, right? What's very, very interesting, folks, though, is that I've spoken with a couple of NASA historians, an astronaut, and I spent an entire afternoon talking to this Apollo engineer for an afternoon at the Manned Space Flight Center in Houston, Texas. And, folks, it's very interesting. They tell me that Apollo 11 really was very extraordinary, but what's very, very, very intriguing is they tell me that almost everything done by Apollo 11 had been done by Apollo 8 first. This astronaut stated, "I consider Apollo 8 the most significant event. Compared to it, Apollo 11 was anticlimactic." Michael Collins was from Apollo 11, and he stated, "Apollo 8's historical significance was foremost," and Neil Armstrong actually agreed with him. The UK Guardian stated, "You could easily argue that Apollo 8, not Apollo 11, deserves the title of the greatest event of the 20th century." A lot more could be said about that, but you might be wondering, what's this got to do with God? I think Apollo 8 had everything to do with God, and for 3 very, very good reasons. Number 1, Apollo 8 honored God more than all other space flights combined. Number 2, more people were praying for Apollo 8 than for any other space flight except for Apollo 13 later on. And number 3, folks, Apollo 8 faced more dangers for the first time than all other space flights combined. Indeed, folks, the general consensus was the Apollo 8 crew might not be coming back. This secular historian stated, "Apollo 8 would be different. There would be no precedence for the trip this time. There were no other men who had survived it before them." Each time I'm in Chicago, I try to visit the Museum of Science and Industry. They've got the Apollo 8 capsule, and it almost always takes my breath away. The sign in front of it says, "Staggering in its audacity, stunning in its complexity, and sobering in its dangers, Apollo 8 journeyed 250,000 miles from Earth, 1,000 times farther than any before." The director of NASA, when he was told about the Apollo 8 mission, he carefully and politely replied, "Are you out of your mind?" He took this to the President of the United States. LBJ overruled him, and James Webb resigned. The director of the Manned Space Flight Center itself, George Mueller, when he was told about Apollo 8's mission, he said, "We can't do that. That's craziness." George Lowe was the Apollo program director, and he said, "If you weren't shaking, you didn't understand the problems." Their chief flight operations director optimistically said there was a 50-50 chance the Apollo 8 crew might come back to Earth. The result, the Apollo 8 wives are a little bit on the worried side. Susan Borman, the wife of the commander, Frank Borman, counted over 6 major dangerous challenges that the crew would face for the first time in history. The result? She wrote her husband's eulogy in preparation for his funeral. Valerie Anders was married to Bill Anders. Bill Anders gave his wife a cassette tape to play on Christmas Day. If he was declared lost in space, he gave her in advance a second cassette tape to play that she should listen to. He stated that he had a 1 out of 3 chance of succeeding. Marilyn Lovell, the wife of the famous astronaut Jim Lovell, said she'd never done so much praying in her life. Rumors were rampant that the Apollo 8 mission was so dangerous that NASA issued suicide tablets to the crew members. The first big problem was the Saturn V rocket, the biggest operational rocket in all of history, past and present. There's never been anything quite like it in operation yet. Its thrust for the first stage alone exceeds that of 75 747s combined. The Saturn V rocket was so expensive, it was only tested twice. The second time it was tested, unmanned, it suffered major malfunctions. If the rocket had been manned, the crew would have been killed. After that unsuccessful test flight, Apollo 8 was going to fly on it. It was known as the Beast. If the first stage alone exploded, the blast would be comparable to that of a tactical nuclear warhead. The result? On launch day, 250,000 people came to watch the liftoff. NASA kept everybody away from the rocket for a distance of 13 square miles. Fortunately, the Beast did not blow up. The Apollo 8 crew were the first human beings to fly over 24,000 miles per hour. They were also the first human beings to reach escape velocity and leave the planet Earth's orbit altogether. They were the first ones to penetrate the ominous Van Allen radiation belts, and they were the first ones to soar truly into outer space for a distance of almost 250,000 miles. Frank Borman saw the entire Earth for the first time with human eyes and stated, "This must be what God sees." The Apollo 8 crew were the first human beings to reach lunar rendezvous, which is a terribly tricky thing. The capsule was flying at that time almost 6,000 miles per hour forward, and they had to intercept the moon, which is flying, I should say, was orbiting sideways at 2,300 miles per hour. They had to reach lunar orbit with an accuracy of 0.0296%. For 20 minutes, NASA held its breath. The capsule reached the moon, but nobody knew for sure if the capsule hit the moon or missed the moon or reached orbit. Marilyn Lovell quietly said they must be in God's hands. After 20 minutes of holding their breaths, they heard the good news that they had reached orbit. They orbited the moon 10 times. They were the first human beings to ever see the far side of the moon, causing Frank Borman to quote from a very popular new TV program. He said, "To boldly go where no man has gone before." And of course, he was quoting what, folks? Star Trek. The two greatest things, though, I like about the Apollo 8 mission would be as follows. Number one, Frank Borman was supposed to pray for his church during a Christmas Eve celebration. NASA said you still can. Frank Borman prayed for his church from lunar orbit. The second awesome thing that many of us remember, on the ninth orbit, the three-man crew took turns reading the story of creation from Genesis chapter 1. They estimated 500,000,000 people heard them do this. One flight dynamics officer who became very famous, Jerry Bostick, he stated, "I was totally overwhelmed. What could be more appropriate than a Bible reading about creation coming from the first people to ever leave the earth on Christmas Eve?" Borman said, "I saw evidence that God lives. Reading from Genesis gave us a new meaning, a new grasp of the miracle of creation." As a result of that broadcast, the Apollo 8 crew was awarded an Emmy by the TV people. Madeline Murray O'Hare, as we said during Sunday school, tried to sue NASA. She was ruled against, although one of the justices said, "I don't know why we're even ruling on this. We have no jurisdiction over the moon." The acting director of NASA, Thomas Paine, said, "It's a triumph of the squares, the guys with the computers and the slide rulers who read the Bible on Christmas Eve." As I said during Sunday school, my favorite U.S. stamp is this one right here. It came out in 1969 in honor of Apollo 8, and on it, "In the beginning, God." Incidentally, folks, the stamp depicts the famous photograph Earthrise. What's really interesting, and nobody knows for sure who did it. Folks, this is not the way the photograph was taken. This is the true orientation of the photograph. But somebody decided they didn't like it sideways, so they turned it 90 degrees. Now you know the truth. At any rate, another secular historian stated, "To see the Earth rising beyond the moon on Christmas Eve was all the confirmation of a creator that Colonel Borman needed." But then, folks, after 10 orbits, it was time to go back home. Once again, almost a quarter of a million miles, they were going to have to rendezvous with the planet Earth with the same accuracy that they rendezvoused with the moon. Fortunately, they were successful. But then, the next major challenge was re-entry. Apollo 8 would be re-entering the Earth's atmosphere far, far faster and far, far hotter than any other manned spaceflight before. NASA was so concerned, they decided to have the Apollo 8 capsule skip across the atmosphere to slow down and cool down a little bit. The Russians had tried that previously, with the result the capsule was destroyed. Fortunately, it worked. The only major glitch in the entire Apollo 8 mission, which was so dangerous and so daring, was that poor Frank Borman got desperately seasick waiting for the recovery ship. Time magazine chose the three-man crew of Apollo 8 as the men of the year. Another secular historian said, "Yuri Gagarin proclaimed he saw no God in space. Borman, Lovell, and Anders saw him everywhere and said so." Susan Borman said, "God has been so very good. I honestly to this day believe with every cell of my body that Apollo 8 was a miracle. Truly, when I consider thy heavens, the work of thy fingers, the moon and the stars which thou hast ordained, what is man that thou art mindful of him?" We could go on and on, folks, regarding other examples that we think illustrate God at work in American history. I thought it was interesting what skeptic Joseph Ellis said in his famous biography on George Washington. "Crucial moments in American history have turned on providential events that defy rational explanation." When you study American history, folks, you become convinced there is a God, and he is very, very active. I hope and pray that all of us here are a little bit more encouraged to realize, once again, God is not done with this country yet. In spite of all of America's sins and shortcomings, God has a purpose for this country. Just a couple quick examples, and then we let people go. You're probably thinking, "Let my people go." Folks, in spite of all of America's sins, the United States translates, publishes, and distributes more copies of God's Word than the entire rest of the world put together. In spite of all of America's sins, America spends more money on gospel missions than the entire rest of the world put together. Except for Israel, I was shocked to find out that America is the only country, folks, with a federal annual reoccurring day of prayer, believe it or not. The list goes on and on and on. May God bless you. May God bless the United States of America. And thank you again for your enormous patience. And now a message from our sponsor, Pastor.